Hi, everyone. Welcome to the end of August. The blue moon is glorious right now. I hope you're enjoying it wherever you are. Today is August 30th, and I'm recording today, and I will likely post this tomorrow on the last day of August. So either tonight or tomorrow, and both, I hope you are enjoying this glorious end of the month full moon. And it's my understanding that it's incredibly close to the earth and just so breathtakingly large and radiant. You know, the moon is always a gift, and all phases of the moon are a gift, but it's extra special right now. So I hope you're enjoying that. I also want to note that if you're familiar with what I do on my website, the sort of creative vein of my offerings, I just released a collection called Farmer's Market, and it'll be available for a few more weeks. And they're just these beautiful graphics and images about harvest. And what I try to do every time I release a thematic collection, it's usually just around 20 items that are just nice seasonal updates for the home, or sometimes, you know, jewelry or nice body products. And it's just keeping with that seasonal rhythm. That's my intention, to have very quality choices and just a few update offerings as the seasons progress through the year. So the one I have right now, again, is Farmer's Market, and it's really some beautiful graphics of oranges and strawberries and lemons and just this lush harvest, first harvest. And I hope you can take a look at that and enjoy what's offered there. There are things like cloth napkins and totes, and sometimes I'll do note cards or just a variety of things, but usually simple updates for the home of high quality and of beautiful imagery. So that's my intention with those updates and those collections, those thematic collections. And so they're always revolving. They usually stay for about a month. This one will be a little bit longer because this will go nicely into the fall season. So I may have a few collections going at once. So I just want to alert you to that. And it's a beautiful way to seasonally be in touch with those deeper rhythms. And also, it's just a reminder of our greater connection in this community with the podcast and all the things we talk about here. That's what I think of when I'm connecting in those ways. I think of you all and the seasons. So that's all connecting to our unity consciousness and our higher expression of knowing we all are intimately connected and blessing each other. So I invite you to look at that at lorigreen.net. And also, if you are not subscribed to my weekly, it's usually weekly, email, do so, because a lot of times I'll offer specials there that are not posted on the website. They're just unique to the email list. And that's something that can also bless both of us. So be sure you're subscribed to that. I had a really lovely moment this past week where someone who listens to the podcast reached out and told me how much she was enjoying it. And that just made my day. And it was a win-win situation because her name is Alexandra Eldridge, Eldridge. And you can find her at alexandraeldridge.com. And I'll be putting a link to her on my website here in the next day. So if you want to link through that form, that's great too. She's also on Instagram. And she sent the nicest email, really commenting on how much we had in common with Jungian and depth psychology and archetypes and things of that nature. And then also tarot. And I know I mentioned talking about the Lover's card last time. And I love to engage with archetypal interaction with tarot. And I love so many rich and beautiful decks. They're so varied. And the art is so compelling. there is a tarot deck for everybody if that is something that appeals to you in terms of archetypal discovery and self-inquiry. And Alexandra just recently released a tarot deck called the Radiant Tarot. And again, I'll link to that on the website, but you can see that on Amazon. It's incredible. It's gorgeous. She is an amazing visionary painter and mixed media artist. And because of the podcast, we connected, and I'm so deeply grateful for that, because her images are just stunning. They're so mystical in nature, and you'll see that when you visit her work. And I was just so delighted. We've had a nice back and forth exchange, and indeed we're planning on connecting in the future, maybe towards the end of the year, on a project where we can perhaps do an interview or something of that nature, so that you all can become more aware of her work and we can connect on her process and her thoughts, her perspectives into this greater work that we do on the podcast. So it was really lovely of somebody to take time to connect. And I want to give a shout out to her and the beautiful work she's doing in the world. I believe she's based in Santa Fe, and she's doing a lot of traveling right now with her art and with her tarot. So connect with her and see what she's about. And again, there'll be more to come later in the year as she and I connect more when she returns from some of her travels. I also wanted to note, with the moon in mind, that I have such a lovely community of people here in Asheville, and then in particular in my neighborhood. And I had connected with some great women at a dinner party in early July, and they reached out again because they have a moon group that meets once a month at the new moon. And it's just a way for women who like traveling with archetypes and introspection and seasonal rhythms to connect and set an intention for the month to come. I've been a part of groups like this before, and sometimes it would revolve around having a soup that would be made by the host, and then everybody else would bring something to complement that meal. Sometimes it's just a snack or a glass of something to drink. And the focus is clearly about the inner life. It's not that men are excluded in any way. It's just a lovely way for women to come and be heard and know that they have the floor and know that they have receptive encouragement, and they can open their hearts and experience and sort of be held in the container of that group as they do their individual and collective spiritual practice. And I'm just so honored to be a part of this group. And, you know, this is like the third moon group I have been a part of in my life. And I just offer this suggestion to those of you out there, whether it's a men's group or a women's group. It's such a rich way to be guided by the seasons and the rhythms of the moon, to have a trusted core of people come together. You know, it's important to be very thoughtful about the people you feel are ready to contribute and who honor the privacy of the group. And I think that's really important. But I just wanted to put this idea out there. Maybe you are in a group like that yourself. If not, I wanted to put that suggestion out there, that it's such an enriching and beautiful way to connect. The moon has always guided my life, and here the moon found me again through these beautiful women. So I'm deeply grateful and just wanted to put that idea out there for any of you that might be so inspired. Today's poem is on the heels of what we talked about last time, about whether we are engaging in partnership or business or a creative project of some kind, or even the interaction with our own physical body, that the sweet spot, that level four consciousness, that I am as me unity consciousness, is so enlivened when we bring that peace into whatever we're doing in our earthly walk. And I really seek to remember that now in every single thing that I do. And there's this poem called The Third Body by Robert Bly that I want to share with you today. And he speaks to that here as well. And it's just honoring the container of the absolute self with a capital S, the absolute divinity, our absolute identity, the I am identity, and to bring that into whatever we're doing is to bless ourselves and the project or the relationship mightily. Indeed, the flow state, the inspiration that accompanies honoring that essential self, that authentic self, it changes everything. It changes everything. And so I want to share this poem with you because he speaks so beautifully in the context of a relationship about honoring this. So here's Robert Bly. A man and a woman sit near each other, and they do not long at this moment to be older or younger or born in any other nation or any other time or any other place. They are content to be where they are, talking or not talking. Their breaths together feed someone whom we do not know. The man sees the way his fingers move. He sees her hands close around a book she hands to him. They obey a third body that they share in common. They have promised to love that body. Age may come, parting may come, death will come. A man and a woman sit near each other. As they breathe, they feed someone we do not know, someone we know of, whom we have never seen. The possibility that exists in approaching the world and your life this way cannot be overstated. This changes everything to honor that third body, that connection, that unity among all of us. And any challenge I see that has ever forced me to reckon with what is real or not real in my life has been leading to this moment of embracing the soul, the authentic self, and letting it guide everything, letting it be the true reality and the true compass about which I know all is well right now. I know I am in beautiful union. I know I am in wealth. I know I am in perfect health. All right now. All right now. The fullness of always being in touch with that presence, which is me, which is you. From that fullness, and from that fullness alone, do the beautiful forms of our life spring forward. And I just wanted to note that in the past couple weeks, another realization came to me that, you know, I live in a community in Asheville, North Carolina, where there's a lot of free thinkers here and, you know, a lot of yoga studios and meditation places and, you know, people who do energy work, et cetera, et cetera. And that's great. That's great. But it doesn't necessarily mean anything. And what I mean by that is I love being part of a community where there's beautiful opportunities and new ways to look at things. But Eckhart Tolle once said, and I completely agree, that just because you are an expert in such modalities, or, you know, you go to Whole Foods every time you shop or whatever it is, you know, you're very vigilant about what you put in your body in terms of nutrition. All of these things are great, but they in and of themselves don't mean that you've started to wake up. And do I ever know that to be the truth? Because I've been intrigued and a seeker by all these things my whole life. And as I sit behind the mic today, I can genuinely say I'm a good person. You know, I've tried to contribute my whole life in various ways, you know, whether it's through my immediate children or my family or the greater community or with coaching or whatever. But I honestly can say I really think I've only started to wake up significantly, meaningfully in the last couple months. And the transurfing reality material, those disciplines have been an instrumental part of that. And I've read Eckhart and the beautiful text, you know, years before. And it's not to say I was completely asleep then, but all of that information now is just coming alive in a way I can't even articulate. My commitment to really bring into focus that nothing happening in the external world is actually quote unquote real, that it's all a mirror of what I am identifying with from the I am space internally. This has really been so profound for me in the last couple months, and challenge has been the vehicle for that. And I am so deeply, deeply grateful for that. And this is not the end of the story. If not for that, I would not be having the impetus to maintain those disciplines, which are indeed gateways. I've said that before. Those disciplines don't just calm and still the mind. They open up an entire gateway to possibility. And I realized having a conversation with somebody in the community, this is not a judgment of this person. This is a lovely person, you know, and I can't say where this person is at in their walk, how awake they are or how not awake they are. That's really none of my business. But I just wanted to point something out that was so profoundly tender, really, to me when I had this conversation with this individual. By all external appearances, this person has plenty of financial independence. This person travels a lot. This person has a very devoted partner. There isn't a lot of external struggle in any way in this person's life. And this person is well-schooled in all these modalities, like I talked about, you know, Reiki or this or whatever, you know, all these things. I'm not trying to be dismissive of them in any way, but this person, you know, spends a lot of energy engaging with all of that. And I realized in talking with this individual, it was shocking to me because they were nearly bereft at a moment where nothing seemed to have any meaning. And I was shocked at that. Yes and no. You know, like at this point, nothing surprises me, although it was startling. And I realized that when you're moving from the consciousness of the work ethic where you're doing all the things, you know, you're engaged in practices and reading a lot and going to workshops and learning about psychology and, you know, moving out of victim consciousness and really taking agency and availing yourself to all the beautiful modalities that can be assists along the way. But at the end of that phase, and I've said this before, at the end of that phase, that ceases to have much meaning because we're meant to go into the experiential I am space 100%, where you have to let go of all of your crutches, if you will, because they do become crutches after a while. We are meant to touch the inner wealth in all areas and know that it is then experiential in our external world. But that is the order from level 4 consciousness. That is the order, inner first, then the outer experience. And we're meant to go there and we're meant to still the mind and go from the heart's desires, knowing that they are precious, knowing that they are meant to be lived and experienced. That is very different than having desires in those earlier stages of consciousness. That can be tricky in the earlier stages of consciousness because it can be a distraction. Desire, the heart's desire in level 3 and 4 is meant to be honored. And I'm very clear on that now, and I feel really relaxed about that now. But in that borderland between leaving level 2 and going into levels 3 and 4, I've said this before, but it can feel like a wasteland because you suddenly don't have the ways of creating, quote unquote, what you thought would sustain you, maybe in terms of your work or your relationship or your health, but yet you don't really know how the new system works, the new consciousness where you're in the I am space and you're not reacting to anything externally. You are not affecting change at all from external interaction. You're only doing clerical tasks in levels 3 and 4, you know, like getting groceries and, you know, paying your phone bill and whatever. You are affecting change only from your interiority and your clarity around who you are and who everybody else is. The I am, the unity consciousness, that devotion to that way of life is so profound. And that's what I'm experiencing this summer. That's what I'm so devoted to. But leaving level 2 and going into that space can feel like a wasteland because the old things don't work anymore. And the new ones, you know, you're sort of getting the lay of the land. And the heart's desires, I've had so many of them for, you know, the past couple of years. And I hadn't realized till having this conversation with this individual how precious that is. And even though there are aspects of my external reality that are still coming into bloom, I am guided and anchored by those heart desires. I know they belong to me. I know they are already in their fullness inside. I know that. And it brings me such joy and such comfort and such elation and such groundedness. And I feel like me when I dwell there. And in visiting with this person in my community, again, not judging where this person is or isn't, that's not my business, but it occurred to me that I hadn't realized that one of the gifts of, quote unquote, the wasteland, where it doesn't feel like anything's happening externally, at least the way you want it to, or it even feels as though it's breaking down externally. Those beautiful heart's desires are such balm. They're such sustenance because it absolutely requires that we turn 100% internally. And that is what belongs to all of us. Regardless, that is our security. That is being held by the universe with such exquisite care. That is accessing wealth in any moment. And it's a mind flip par excellence to quiet the ego and to not get distracted or seduced by external noise. But that reward is so great because you see all that is vibrant and full and blooming inside. And aligning with that then becomes an absolute joy. And the assist you have of the greater cosmos, you know, sorting things out on your behalf, you're entering the miraculous zone. And when I realized with this person who didn't have any external obstacles really to speak of, I realized though that perhaps they were in the space where level 2 stuff was starting to break down. And that's a tender time. That is a tender time. And if you've been in that desert for a while, it can feel interminable. It can feel like it lasts so long. But the muscle, the sovereign muscle that is developed during that time. And then suddenly, this is what I found most beautiful about that conversation with this individual, is I thought, oh my God, there's all these beautiful roses blooming in my desert internally. And indeed, I'm not in a desert at all internally. And those heart's desires are absolutely my compass and my guide. And they are being realized in this moment. They're fully realized internally, and they are definitely being realized externally. But I didn't realize what an absolute joy it was to be able to say, I do have heart's desires. This person at this moment wasn't in a moment where there was any heart's desire. And I think that's because the old situation, the old consciousness, is winding down so that the new can start to take hold. That person will absolutely have heart's desires. But until I spoke with that individual, I did not realize how precious, even in the midst of an external quote-unquote desert, I didn't realize how precious those heart's desires are, because it has compassed everything that I've been about, and it's helped me keep this discipline of quieting the mind and not reacting externally, because it is so beautiful internally. So I hope that is helpful in some way, that as we're moving through level one, level two, level three, level four, as you're shifting your center of gravity from the external being your point of reference to the internal being your only place of affecting change, that crossover time, I've always had all my needs met during that time, but the sense of thriving in my life had not yet been externally realized, but I know that it will. I absolutely know that it will, and my heart's desires are proof of that. And I know this person that I visited with will also have this moment. And the moment that this individual is going into is just as important as anything. But it's that stripping away and that getting really real. And so, you know, energy work, massage, you know, drumming. I mean, there's endless modalities, aren't there, out there for people connecting with spirit or whatever. And that's great, but it may mean nothing. And I have to say that, because sometimes, you know, you run into people that, I love you all, not you all, but, you know, love humanity. But sometimes people are so flaky and you're like, yeah, I don't know if this is it. And, you know, I just got to be real about that. And we've all had those moments, and everybody's in the process of deepening into that. And, you know, I say it knowing that I've been completely flaky in moments of my life too. But I just wanted to comment on how precious it is that even if you find yourself in a moment where not everything externally is in a thrive zone, it will be. It will be. Because your heart's desires actually are the vehicle for that happening. So I feel like that's so important as a lead into what we're going to talk about today. I'm calling today's episode Experiential Depth, because I've always been interested in depth psychology and deeper thoughts and deeper texts and deeper experience in terms of reading about it. But again, level three and level four are only about experiencing that depth and letting it be lead dog, letting it guide everything that is happening. And it's so often very surprising how external circumstances appear and shift and move when we are experientially in our depth. So I wanted to share another chapter from Autobiography of a Yogi today, I mentioned this last time. There's this incredible poem he writes, and I'll just share this chapter with you. We're going to be reading chapter 14 together from that text. And he shares a poem about going in to that sacred center, and it is extraordinary. And so I just wanted to sort of wind down our summer conversation with that beautiful language, that beautiful chapter on essence itself. And it's such a guiding light to encourage us to continue to allow that shifting of that center of gravity from the external to the interiority, in which we're connected to everything and to everyone. So here is chapter 14, An Experience in Cosmic Consciousness by Paramahansa Yogananda. I'll do my best with the Hindi pronunciation of names, so bear with me. I am here, Guruji. My shamefacedness spoke more eloquently for me. Let us go into the kitchen and find something to eat. Sri Yukteswar's manner was as natural as if hours and not days had separated us. This is Yogananda and his guru. Master, I must have disappointed you by my abrupt departure from my duties here. I thought you might be angry with me. No, of course not. Wrath springs only from thwarted desires. I do not expect anything from others, so their actions cannot be in opposition to wishes of mine. I would not use you for my own ends. I am happy only in your own true happiness. Sir, one hears of divine love in a vague way, but for the first time I am having a concrete example in your angelic self. In the world, even a father does not easily forgive his son if he leaves his parents' business without warning. But you show not the slightest vexation, though you must have been put to great inconvenience by the many unfinished tasks I've left behind. We looked into each other's eyes, where tears were shining. A blissful wave engulfed me. I was conscious that the Lord, in the form of my guru, was expanding the small ardors of my heart into the incompressible reaches of cosmic love. A few mornings later, I made my way to Master's empty sitting room. I planned to meditate, but my laudable purpose was unshared by disobedient thoughts. They scattered like birds before the hunter. Mukunda! Yukteswar's voice sounded from a distant inner balcony. I felt as rebellious as my thoughts. Master always urges me to meditate, I muttered to myself. He should not disturb me when he knows why I came to his room. He summoned me again. I remained obstinately silent. The third time, his tone held rebuke. Sir, I am meditating, I shouted protestingly. I know how you are meditating, my guru called out, with your mind distributed like leaves in a storm. Come here to me. Snubbed and exposed, I made my way sadly to his side. Poor boy, the mountains couldn't give what you wanted, Master spoke caressively, comfortingly. His calm gaze was unfathomable. Your heart's desire shall be fulfilled. Sri Yukteswar seldom indulged in riddles. I was bewildered. He struck gently on my chest above the heart. My body became immovably rooted. Breath was drawn out of my lungs as if by some huge magnet. Soul and mind instantly lost their physical bondage and streamed out like a fluid piercing light from my every pore. The flesh was as though dead, yet in my intense awareness, I knew that never before had I been so fully alive. My sense of identity was no longer narrowly confined to a body, but embraced the circumambient atoms. People on distant streets seemed to be moving gently over my own remote periphery. The roots of plants and trees appeared through a dim transparency of the soil. I discerned the inward flow of their sap. The whole vicinity lay bare before me. My ordinary frontal vision was now changed to a vast spherical sight, simultaneously all perceptive. Through the back of my head, I saw men strolling far down Ray Ghat Road, and noticed also a white cow who was leisurely approaching. When she reached the space in front of the open ashram gate, I observed her with my two physical eyes. As she passed by, behind the brick wall, I saw her clearly still. All objects within my panoramic gaze trembled and vibrated like quick motion pictures. My body, masters, the pillared courtyard, the furniture, the floor, the trees, the sunshine, occasionally became violently agitated until all melted into a luminescent sea, even as sugar crystals thrown into a glass of water dissolve after being shaken. The unifying light alternated with materializations of form, the metamorphosis revealing the law of cause and effect in creation. An oceanic joy broke upon calm, endless shores of my soul. The Spirit of God, I realized, is exhaustless bliss. His body is countless tissues of light. A swelling glory within me began to envelop towns, continents, the earth, solar and stellar systems, tenuous nebulae and floating universes, the entire cosmos, gently luminous, like a city seen afar at night, glimmered within the infinitude of my being. The sharply etched global outlines faded somewhat at the farthest edges. There I could see a mellow radiance, ever undiminished. It was indescribably subtle. The planetary pictures were formed of a grosser light. The divine dispersion of rays poured from an eternal source, blazing into galaxies, transfigured with ineffable auras. Again and again, I saw the creative beams condense into constellations, then resolve into sheets of transparent flame. By rhythmic reversion, sextillion worlds passed into diaphanous luster. Fire became firmament. I recognized the center of the Empyrean as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure, blissful Amitra. The nectar of immortality pulsed through me with a quicksilver-like fluidity. The creative voice of God I heard resounding as Om, the vibration of the cosmic motor. Suddenly, the breath returned to my lungs. With a disappointment almost unbearable, I realized that my infinite immensity was lost. Once more, I was limited to the humiliating cage of a body, not easily accommodative to the spirit. Like a prodigal child, I had run away from my macrocosmic home and imprisoned myself in a narrow microcosm. My guru was standing motionless before me. I started to drop at his holy feet in gratitude for the experience in cosmic consciousness, which I had long passionately sought. He held me upright and spoke calmly, unpretentiously. You must not get overdrunk with ecstasy. Much work yet remains for you in the world. Come, let us sweep the balcony floor, then we shall walk by the Ganges. I fetched a broom. Master, I knew, was teaching me the secret of balanced living. The soul must stretch over the cosmogonic abysses while the body performs its daily duties. When we set out later for a stroll, I was still entranced in unspeakable rapture. I saw our bodies as two astral pictures moving over a road by the river whose essence was sheer light. It is the Spirit of God that actively sustains every form and force in the universe, yet He is transcendental and aloof in the blissful, uncreated void beyond the worlds of vibratory phenomena, Master explained. Saints who realize their divinity, even while in the flesh, know a similar twofold existence. Conscientiously engaging in earthly work, they yet remain immersed in an inward beatitude. The Lord has created all men from the limitless joy of His being. Though they are painfully cramped by the body, God nevertheless expects that souls made in His image shall ultimately rise above all sense identifications and reunite with Him. The cosmic vision left many permanent lessons. By daily stilling my thoughts, I could win release from the delusive conviction that my body was a mass of flesh and bones, traversing the hard soil of matter. The breath and the restless mind I saw were like storms which lashed the ocean of light into waves of material forms, earth, sky, human beings, animals, birds, trees. No perception of the infinite as one light could be had except by calming those storms. As often as I silenced the two natural tumults, I beheld the multitudinous waves of creation melt into one lucent sea. Even as the waves of the ocean, their tempest subsiding serenely, dissolving into unity. A master bestows the divine experience of cosmic consciousness when his disciple, by meditation, has strengthened his mind to a degree where the vast vistas would not overwhelm him. The experience can never be given through one's mere intellectual willingness or open-mindedness. Only adequate enlargement by yoga practice and devotional bhakti can prepare the mind to absorb the liberating shock of omnipresence. It comes with a natural inevitability to the sincere devotee. His intense cravings begin to pull at God with an irresistible force. The Lord, as the cosmic vision, is drawn by the seeker's magnetic ardor into his range of consciousness. I wrote in my later years the following poem, Samadhi, endeavoring to convey the glory of this cosmic state. Vanished the veils of light and shade, lifted every vapor of sorrow, sailed away all dawns of fleeting joy, gone the dim sensory mirage, love, hate, health, disease, life, death, perished these false shadows on the screen of dual. Waves of laughter, scillas of sarcasm, melancholic melting in the vast sea of bliss. The storm of Maya stilled by magic wand of intuition deep. The universe, forgotten dream, subconsciously ready to invade my newly wakened memory. I live without the cosmic shadow, but it is not bereft of me. As the sea exists without the waves, but they breathe not without the sea. Dreams, wakings, states of deep, Turiya sleep, present, past, future, no more for me. But ever present, all flowing I everywhere. Planets, stars, stardust, earth. Volcanic bursts of doomsday cataclysms, creation's molding furnace, glaciers of silent x-rays, burning electron floods. Thoughts of all men, past, present, to come, every blade of grass, myself, mankind, each particle of universal dust, anger, greed, good, bad, salvation, lust. I swallowed, transmuted all into a vast ocean of blood of my own one being. Smoldering joy, off puffed by meditation, blinding my tearful eyes, burst into immortal flames of bliss, consumed my tears, my frame, my all. Thou art, I am thou, knowing, knower, known as one, tranquil, unbroken thrill, eternally living, enjoyable beyond imagination of expectancy, not an unconscious state or mental chloroform without willful return, samadhi, but extends my conscious realm beyond limits of the mortal frame, to farthest boundary of eternity, where I, the cosmic sea, watch the little ego floating in me. The sparrow, each grain of sand, fall not without my sight. All space floats like an iceberg in my mental sea. Colossal container, I, of all things made. By deeper, longer, thirsty, guru-given meditation comes this celestial samadhi. Mobile murmurs of atoms are heard. The dark earth, mountains, veils, low, molten liquid, flowing seas change into vapors of nebulae. Om blows upon vapors, opening wondrously their veils. Oceans stand revealed, shining electrons, till at last sound of the cosmic drum vanish the grosser lights into eternal rays of all-pervading bliss. From joy I came, for joy I live, in sacred joy I melt. Ocean of mind, I drink all creation's waves, four veils of solid, liquid, vapor, light. Lift aright, myself and everything enters the great myself. Gone forever, fitful, flickering shadows of mortal memory. Spotless is my mental sky, below, ahead, and high above. Eternity and I, one united ray, a tiny bubble of laughter. I am become the sea of mirth itself. Sri Yukteswar taught me how to summon the blessed experience at will, and also how to transmit it to others if their intuitive channels were developed. For months, I entered the ecstatic union, comprehending why the Upanishads say God is rasa, the most relishable. One day, however, I took a problem to master. I want to know, sir, when shall I find God? You have found him. Oh no, sir, I don't think so. My guru was smiling. I am sure you aren't expecting a venerable personage adorning a throne in some antiseptic corner of the cosmos. I see, however, that you are imagining that the possession of miraculous powers is knowledge of God. One might have the whole universe and find the Lord elusive still. Spiritual advancement is not measured by one's outward powers, but only by the depth of his bliss in meditation. Ever new joy is God. He is inexhaustible. As you continue your meditations during the years, he will beguile you with an infinite ingenuity. Devotees like yourself who have found the way to God never dream of exchanging him for any other happiness. He is seductive beyond thought of competition. How quickly we weary of earthly pleasures. Desire for material things is endless. Man is never satisfied completely and pursues one goal after another. The something else he seeks is the Lord, who alone can grant lasting joy. Outward longings drive us from the Eden within. They offer false pleasures which only impersonate soul happiness. The lost paradise is quickly regained through divine meditation. As God is unanticipatory ever newness, we never tire of him. Can we be surfeited with bliss delightfully varied throughout eternity? I understand now, sir, why saints call the Lord unfathomable. Every everlasting life could not suffice to appraise him. That is true, but he is also near and dear. After the mind has been cleared by Kriya Yoga of sensory obstacles, meditation furnishes a twofold proof of God. Ever new joy is evidence of his existence, convincing to our very atoms. Also, in meditation one finds his instant guidance, his adequate response to every difficulty. I see, Guru. You have solved my problem. I smile gratefully. I do realize now that I have found God, for whenever the joy of meditation has returned subconsciously during my active hours, I have been suddenly directed to adopt the right course in everything, even details. Human life is beset with sorrow until we know how to tune in with the divine will, whose right course is often baffling to the egoistic intelligence. God bears the burden of the cosmos. He alone can give unerring counsel. I just find that chapter so much an explosion of the heart, and I very gratefully have had, you know, glimmers and moments of that ecstatic joy and guidance, as I know you have too. We're so grateful for level 3 consciousness, where those moments of grace and peak experiences, which are actually our natural state, pierce through, you know, the illusion of what's going on in our earthly walk. But I just find this chapter so exquisite and just wanted to read it verbatim. Again, you can find this online very easily. It's in the public domain. And so I just feel that this is a beautiful way to sort of wind down the summer. Of course, it exists for a few more weeks on the calendar. And we're not putting these ideas away. We will continue to travel in this level 4 consciousness and the disciplines that help us navigate it and receive it and enjoy it. But I just thought this was a beautiful way, just thinking of the sun in her zenith, to sort of conclude, you know, the ecstatic joy of that radiance. And our focus, our disciplines, are only revealing this to us. And like I said before, if our order is to put this first, then anything external is going to very quickly fall into place. That is the most secure, most vibrant, healthiest, most joyful way I know to be. And it's just continuing to gather in my own awareness. And so every time we connect, we're sharing these ideas together, and I'm deeply grateful for you on the journey of all these discoveries. And just a few thoughts ahead for what I'm anticipating for fall. I have another series, delightful series in mind, that's captured my imagination. And, you know, long ago, as many of us, I've just been enthralled by the Arthurian legends, the legend of the Holy Grail, the Knights of the Round Table, Camelot, all of that. And I've studied it a bit in the past, but I want to take another dive into that very much from the perspective of this level four I am consciousness. Again, everything I do, I think from now on is always going to be compassing around that and newly seen through that lens of connecting with that, which is our authenticity, which is our birthright. And I, in particular, want to focus on the women of the Arthurian legends and the Grail itself. The Holy Grail itself is what was just described by Yogananda, that interiority that is the divine. That's the Grail. That is the Grail. We all are already in possession of the Grail. And so to visit these myths and legends again through the lens of the feminine, which I feel is so important because, as I've said in the past, the anima exists archetypally as close as it can to life itself. So I want to look at the different faces of the feminine in regards to the Grail. And that's going to be where we head off in a new direction, but the same direction, inward direction for the fall months, which I really look forward to sharing with you. So enjoy the moon tonight and tomorrow. Be well. Enjoy the harvest time. And until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.